In Hatch, New Mexico, police officer Jose Chavez, 33, a hero who died in the line of duty, was shot down during a routine traffic stop in this historic Doniana town. An Ohio fugitive already wanted for murder was arrested. The 38-year-old Jesse Haynes is suspected of gunning down Hatch police officer Jose Chavez, 33, during this traffic stop. Haynes fled and was then suspected of carjacking a man at a rest stop before shooting him in the stomach. The man's condition is, has been stabilized. Authorities say the deadly confrontation began when Chavez pulled over Haynes, driving a luxury car with two passengers in the village of Hatch, about 40 miles northwest of Las Cruces. A fellow officer arriving to assist Chavez then said that he saw him holding paperwork and searching for his service weapon before he was shot and fell to the ground. The officer reported that he saw a gun raised. It was shot and smoke rising from the weapon as Chavez crumpled to the ground. Haynes then fled onto Interstate 25 at speeds over 100 miles an hour before stopping at a rest stop. Sheriff's deputies then spotted Haynes in a stolen vehicle and pursued, slowing it down by deflating the tires. The suspect crashed the vehicle into a pile of wood, briefly barricaded himself in the car before surrendering to deputies. The suspect had a gunshot wound to the right thigh, which was self-inflicted. Witnesses say that after the police shooting, one of the suspects was seen approaching motorists and demanding their keys. And when one driver refused to go with the suspect, he was shot in the torso one time. Victim was transported to a trauma center in El Paso, condition unknown. Haynes' two passengers were also arrested. However, after an investigation, one of them was released because he turned out to be merely a hitchhiker. Chavez, who was shot in the neck, died at University Medical Center in El Paso, Texas. He had been an officer with the department for 2 years. So we've lost one of our own during this terrible time of violence against police officers. And, you know, it's just, I don't know what to say. His family has said he didn't deserve to die. And of course he didn't deserve to die, but, you know, I mean, to shoot somebody during a traffic stop, so gutless. Authorities are not sure why Chavez pulled the Lexus over. Jesse Haynes was wanted in Ohio in the July 25th shooting death of a 62-year-old man just out of Chillicothe, 60 miles south of Columbus. And he also had another person with him, which was James Nelson, and who's also wanted for various charges in Ohio. Haynes was 16 and living in Columbus when he pleaded guilty in 1995 to involuntary manslaughter and other charges. Sentenced to prison and released at 32. He went to prison again in 2014, pleading guilty to robbery. Nelson, who goes by JD, has a string of drug-related convictions in Central Ohio dating back to the 1990s. So Haynes is hospitalized and has not yet been booked, according to this CBS article that was actually a couple of days old. So in any event, terrible news, and obviously Hatch is not a very big community. So the loss of one of their own is absolutely devastating. Albuquerque Journal has a picture of them. If you look up on it, YouTube, escort of Officer Jose Chavez to OMI. It's terrible. So anyway, it really hits home, this I don't know what to say. It just seems so totally random and pointless, but anyway, now, according to KVIA, Nelson AJD, and pardon me, the it is J.D. Haynes, not Nelson, but who is pictured that is the shooter. Jesse Haynes, 38, and James Nelson. So those are the two names. And Jesse Haynes has been charged with an open count of murder. So driving a silver Lexus, 1991 Lexus, pulled over Friday afternoon by a 33-year-old Hatch police officer, Jose Chavez. Deputies say Haynes was driving the Lexus when he allegedly shot Officer Chavez through the passenger side window of the car as Chavez approached the vehicle during the stop. And then Nelson had shifted to the back seat, I guess, from according to this report. Anyway, bad news. Let's take a little break here, though, and just in honor of this, whether he was shot in a robbery or a traffic stop, you know, doesn't really matter. He was serving the people, and he died a hero. Kelly O'Connell, 614. I'm going to be handing the show over this morning to Keith at about 6:30. And I've got some trial work to do. So anyway, Keith is going to run the show tomorrow, and I should be back on Wednesday. But here is some more taps in honor of Officer Chavez, who lost his life serving the people of Doñana and Hatch, New Mexico, on Friday. Now, there is a lot of unrest also in Milwaukee, and there was a shooting of a young black man who I had done some research on, and he was, I mean, this guy was tatted up, gold teeth, had pictures of him holding assault rifles and pistols, and the police officer claims that he was had his hand on a gun when he was shot, and he had been shot before, I believe, a couple of times, but total chaos there. But like I say, we've got our own police issues to deal with here. One of our own has been shot down by a coward during a routine traffic stop. The cop didn't even know he was in danger. Had just graduated the academy a couple of years ago. And it's, you know, it's a sad day. There's so much. Jose Chavez was the officer, and so much violence out there and hatred of police officers. And, of course, we don't know if this had anything to do with that. It's a guy fleeing from Ohio murder charges himself. So it could be just a coincidence that there are so many police officers getting shot. But here's a little bit from KOAT.
Kirsten, this was just the starting point for this afternoon's chaos. Chaos that spanned about 4 hours, according to police. Around 3:41 p.m., that officer pulled over a car with those suspects inside. Police say one of the passengers got out during the traffic stop and shot the officer. We're told those suspects took off southbound on I-25, where they pulled over to a rest stop near Radium Springs. Around 4 p.m., police say the suspect shot and carjacked a driver at the rest stop and continued heading south. That's when Doñana County Sheriff's deputy spotted the car and pursued. After blowing out their tires with the spike strip, the suspects turned into a house off of NM 185. The driver of the car crashed into a pile of wood while the two other suspects bailed. They were all taken into custody shortly after the crash. Police tell us the suspect driving the car was shot in the leg somehow, and right now we don't know how the carjacking victim who was shot is doing. So clearly there are a lot of pieces of the puzzle investigators still have to put together. We'll let you know as soon as we learn new details. And Hatch, Matt Howerton, KOAT Action 7 News.
So, you know, Hatch is really not that big. Not a big place, and the death of anybody is going to be felt, but a death of a police officer in a force with just 8 officers is just devastating. And you know, a town like that, the police officers are going to be family and friends of the community, you know. So my heart goes out to that family, and certainly they need and deserve the prayers of the entire Dona Ana community.
That's right, Doug. This is one of two memorials, and you can see people have been leaving flowers and cards on this Hatch police car. Officer Chavez's sister tells me being a police officer is something her brother always dreamed of.
We miss him a lot.
Patricia Damirez can't hold back tears as she grieves for her brother, fallen Hatch police officer Jose Chavez. She says those who were close to him called him Ismael. Ramirez told me her brother's life revolved around two things.
His little girls meant everything to him, and his family, you know, they're the most important to him, and his job.
It's a job Ramirez says her brother always dreamed of doing.
Since he was a boy, he always wanted to be a police officer. We are small, you know, that's all he talked about.
And he was living his dream while earning a living to support his two little girls. Amita says the youngest is struggling with this the most.
She's the one that was there. My brother had her all the time. They were always together. And I think she's going to have a hard time with this.
Officer Chavez's death has been hard on this entire community. As people leave blue balloons and more flowers.
Yeah, this laugh that it was contagious.
Chavez's best friend says he'll miss his friend's laughter at a time when he needs it the most.
And I know that what he wants from us today is to be strong.
The funeral arrangements for Officer Chavez are still in the works. As we mentioned, Daniel's Funeral Home in Albuquerque has offered to pay for those services. Reporting live in Hatch tonight, Sandra Ramirez, KWT Action 7 News.
And there's also a vigil for the officer. But, you know, it's just he's a young guy, you know, young family, and apparently had a real happy personality, and despite the fact that he was doing police work. And what an awful way to go, you know. Here's another clip from KOAT.
Came together for one reason.
Knowing that my brother was loved and that so many people, he touched so many people's lives and that you guys cared.
To remember a servant of the Hatch community taken too soon, police officer Jose Chavez.
Stuff like this isn't supposed to happen here. And it's heartbreaking.
Friday night, Chavez died in a Texas hospital. Police say the officer wound up there after being shot by an Ohio fugitive he pulled over in Hatch. Chavez was just 33 years old and had only spent 2 years on the force. He was also a father of two. Tonight, in front of the Hatch police station, many who knew Chavez best said he was a man who embodied honor and courage. His sister, Patricia Ramirez, held back tears just talking about it.
I keep hoping that they'll tell us, you know, that this isn't real, and we miss him a lot.
Candles shined brightly and tears were shed as memories of Chavez were shared.
Today will be so messy.
Scriptures were read.
And let the perpetual life shine upon him.
Prayer filled the air. And songs were sang as the night came to a close, many emphasizing that even though Chavez is gone, he won't be forgotten.
I'm still doing his duty up in heaven, watching over everybody, especially his family.
The mayor of Hatch says that this tragedy is really hitting their tight-knit community hard. He tells us this is the first time in decades something like this has happened there. Back to you.
And I've got one other clip here from KRQE on the shooting.
Chavez, the Hatch police officer shot and killed in the line of duty during a traffic stop. The investigation into that officer's death continues. And today we learned the two men now charged in his murder were actually fleeing murder charges in Ohio. News 13's Candace Hopkins reports.
Couldn't believe it. You know, you don't expect anything like this in a small little town.
This is the spot where 3-year-old Hatch police officer Jose Chavez was shot yesterday afternoon. Today, people stopped by to pay their respects here and at a cruiser parked up the street.
I sat there and I literally cried. You know, he is a member of our community.
Investigators say Officer Chavez pulled over a car here on Franklin Street and was shot in the neck. The three men in the car fled, leading officers on a chase on I-25. They lost sight of the car and it exited at Radium Springs. Their officials say one suspect, 38-year-old Jesse Haynes, shot a man, then stole his car. Officers later caught up with him. Meanwhile, Officer Chavez was taken to El Paso for treatment, but later died. He was a 2-year veteran of the Hatch Police Force and had graduated the Doña Ana Law Enforcement Academy.
We had a real reminder yesterday that no matter where you're at, things can happen. There is no guarantee you come home.
The suspects, Jesse Haynes and James Nelson, were running from murder charges in Ohio. According to the Chillicothe Gazette, both men had recently served time for violent crimes. Haynes and Nelson are accused of shooting a 62-year-old man to death at the end of July.
Just a senseless act that took a good officer, a good dad away.
Candace Hopkins, KRQE News 13.
A third man in that car was a hitchhiker and is not charged in this case. The Hatch Police Department, only made up of 8 officers. Doña Ana County Sheriff's deputies are now covering all calls for service in that village until at least Monday morning to give that small department time to mourn.
At KRQ.
And so, obviously, you know, our hearts go out to the police officers who are mourning and the family, and like I say, definitely need the prayers of everybody in Doña Ana. Anyway, as I mentioned, I've got some trial work this morning, so Keith my old buddy Keith, who had the show after mine for a few years, has been kind enough to come in and cover, and he'll have his own stuff going on. But got a little Dexter Gordon for you, one of the top 50 jazz albums. Go 629 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces AM 1450 523 1450 to call in. And Keith Welpley is here, and we'll be right back.
And welcome back. This is Keith Welpley sitting in for Kelly O'Connell. He's here right now, and he's going to help me make sure I can navigate this board.
It's like riding a bike.
Yeah, it's riding a bike. That and some other things, like riding a bike, right? But anyway, happy that you called me. Always happy to fill in for you. Sorry I can't do it more frequently, but, you know, every once in a while, pop in and that sort of thing. So much going on. I was catching a bit of your show, and the officer, the death in Hatch is tragic. What's going on in Milwaukee, tragic. And I don't know if you read the article coming out of Chicago. Chicago Tribune reported that over a period of less than 24 hours, there were just these street shootings resulted, I believe, in 5 deaths, 14 people sent to the hospital and wounded. Don't have any suspects. It's just some guy, maybe some guy, maybe it's one, maybe it's multiple people, just drove around Chicago and shot people throughout a period of 12 hours. Waiting to hear more on that, because I don't know what motive there might have been. If it is one guy, is it multiple guys? We just don't know. But the level of shooting, I don't know. What's your read? Are we seeing more of it? Or
I think there's more. What I was thinking about, Keith, and maybe you can react to this, because we're on slightly different sides of the same coin, maybe. I'm a little more conservative. Keith is a little more to the center. But my impression is there is some racial unrest that seems to be ginned up. It seems like it's getting worse. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, if we start a race war, how does it end? I mean, is this the beginning of it?
Yeah. After the shooting in Milwaukee, and of course, I'm just devastated by what happened in Hatch. A young man, handsome young man, young family, had his whole life in front of him. This happened, and then the Milwaukee thing, a little more distant, so you can kind of look at it differently. And then they had the brother, I believe, of the young man who was shot. And of course, as you pointed out, this guy was seemed to be a pretty bad actor, and he had, I guess, had a gun in his hand. Every witness said he had a gun, and apparently the gun was acquired through an earlier robbery. And then the young brother got on air and started saying, "You're killing us. You're killing us." And I'm thinking to myself, why are, you know, I think this is where it's getting really fuzzy. I mean, certainly there is some unintended deaths and maybe some unfortunate police overreaction and some deaths and that sort of thing. But I think a lot of people who clearly are doing bad things are using this as sort of subterfuge or cover up or a smokescreen for doing bad things.
I've got an example for what you're talking about. The murder rate in all the large cities has spiked, and places like over in Maryland, Baltimore, where the Freddie Gray situation was playing out, even though those officers were all found to be innocent of murder, the crime spiked. The police officers stepped back because they felt like the state didn't have their back, and the upshot was then everything becomes more violent.
Yeah. You know, I stopped reacting, and I have friends who will post anything that has to do with shootings, police shootings, black on white, white on black. I stopped looking at them because it's so important that we just let the process, let the investigation happen. And, you know, the young people who feel like they have to go to violence to change things are so totally wrong. They have to get into the system.
I read a great article from New Yorker several months ago talking about the Albuquerque situation, which is a real situation. They have some real bad actors who have filtered into the police force. And this is happening across the country. And it has to do with, first of all, police force is desperate for finding qualified people. And so they sort of pull in anybody who seems to be looking for a job, who knows about the police work, without really any due diligence in figuring out who these people really are. Why don't they have a job? How do they perform? So on the other side of the coin, you have people who will raise their hand and say, well, I think this is overreaction by the police. And then they get attacked for raising that question, because how dare you raise the question about men in blue? Well, we have to do that as a society. You have to make sure that you monitor a civilian monitoring system is the best. See if that police force is doing what we as a community want them to do.
Well, let me ask you this, though. In case after case with a few bad apples, we found that juries and courts, investigators have stated that these shootings are justified. And what I don't understand is the rush to judgment without looking into the facts first.
Right. And that is always nipped us in the bud. Many, every time we've done it, it's killed us. The Zimmerman case, classic example. People rush to judgment. Turns out the kid is kind of demented.
Yeah.
The Zimmerman kid. You know, and this is another reason that when I see these things come across my Facebook feed, used to be I shared some. I don't do it anymore. Yeah. When it has a police, any violence or any deaths or shootings related to police forces, I don't share, because I believe they need to be investigated, adjudicated, whatever system is in place.
And we know that these police officers are all individually trained, and these are individual incidents, and each one of them seems to have more of a story than it comes out of it initially in the media.
Right, exactly. And that again happens almost every time. But there are some that are just purely brutality.
There was one in Chicago where the kid was running away, and the cop just pulled out his gun and gunned him down like a dirty dog. And then the mayor ended up getting in trouble because they bought out the family for $5 million without an investigation. And then hit the fan. So there are bad cops out there, but I think the vast majority are trying to do a good job.
Every policeman that I know is a good person, a good cop. I also think that you need to weigh these dangerous situations when you're confronted by people. You're a good person. Despite all your training, you still are reactive. You're a human being. You're reactive. And maybe the split-second decision process you should have gone through, you sort of jump over and do something that you probably shouldn't. So good people can do bad things, in short.
Sure. And I mean, people do also make mistakes.
Okay. Take a look at this. Am I supposed to be going to break right now?
You're supposed to go to break. We got some weather for you, and there has been some flooding out in Louisiana that is just absolutely shocking. In one of the towns in Louisiana, it's over 30 inches in 3 days. 7,000 rescues as of yesterday, 3 dead, but many, many missing. So also the flooding in Mississippi, flooding in Texas, flooding in Louisiana is just terrible. And but anyway, we are going to break right now with the weather. And Keith, I really appreciate you covering for me.
Anytime, Kelly. Well, not anytime, obviously. But
last minute. But anyway, Keith, we got to get you back here on a regular basis. You got your own perspective that is very. I don't know. I enjoy sitting here listening to you.
At any rate, we're going to go to weather. Be right back. And then out in the lobby, we have Mel Honick, who was my co-host for a good period of time, and we're going to talk about our things after you leave. So weather up, then we're back. Keith Welpley sitting in for Kelly O'Connell, and Mel Honick has joined me. Mel, it's been a while.
Good morning, Keith. It's great to be back.
Yeah. You know, Kelly had asked me to fill in every once in a while. Unfortunately, I can't do it as often as he would like, because I have I have a real job.
Yes, you do. You get up early in the morning and drive all over the state and deliver salsa to all those.
Yeah.
You're like Santa Claus.
Yeah, Old Gringo Salsa Company, chili company. And that's been a wild ride. And I tell you what, I always thought one of the things I'd like to do before I go is actually be part of a manufacturing.
Before you go, you mean before you...
Before we go underground.
Oh,
and,
okay. Before you start pushing up. Yeah, okay. Other side of the grass. I got it.
I always wanted to be part of a manufacturing operation. And I love this because, you know, salsa, it's a manufacturing. They've got a small factory here in Las Cruces. And, you know, I get to help with marketing and getting into new markets. And I'm learning. I learned so much about the blue collar people all the way up to the white collar. And I tell you know which group I love working with the most? Yes.
Blue.
Right.
Because you say up. It really isn't up, is it? It's really just sort of sideways.
I love receiving in the back door. A lot of the guys out there listening may be receivers. Who are delivery guys who go to the back doors of Walmarts and Smiths and all the grocery stores early in the morning. There's a whole culture of people that are up and at 'em, are doing it at all hours of the day and night. And they're
mostly early morning.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, these drivers are actually getting from one point to another during the night. And then so they get to the 4 o'clock window.
Right.
For instance, if you're going to Artesia from Albuquerque, you got to wake up early because the window opens at 4 in the morning. So you have to be on the road by, what, midnight?
Well, in the RV, you know, I'm in truck stops a lot. You can see all these trucks pulling out. You know that they're staged just miles from where they're going.
Yeah.
And they're all pulling out real early in the morning to go and do exactly that.
Yeah. So it's been a real learning experience. And so I enjoy it. It's fun. That takes up most of my time. Of course, Southwest Senior is still alive and kicking.
Yeah.
My newspaper, I enjoy working with too, but I've got a good staff. They kind of run it for me. And so it's been great. Now you, on the other hand, you've been, just sticking to one thing and that's, solar.
Yeah. We just keep doing that.
Did you know at TRC, I was driving in TRC delivering.
You're talking about the Walmart.
The Walmart. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was amazed. Walmart. Now this is relatively new, for me, anyway. I started our product in the Walmart in TRC. They didn't have lean-tos, or I don't know what you would call them, but they were
lean-tos.
Yeah, they were just these
solar shade structures.
Yeah, it was just a regular parking lot, and I go up there and I think, wow, they
whole thing's covered in solar panels,
and it's amazing. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, this isn't just some sort of far out exotic. Walmart doesn't throw good money after bad.
Not typically, no.
Solar.
They've done this across the country, actually. And so not in every store, but not outside every store. But, yeah, they've done this across the country. And that system was installed by one of my colleagues up in Albuquerque.
Yeah. So what do they do? How much energy are they doing? And how much does it offset the power that is required to run one of these super centers?
Honestly, I don't know because I wasn't involved in the project.
But it's real. I mean, it's
Well, it's absolutely real. I can't say it doesn't mean that they're making – they're offsetting all of their power, but they're certainly offsetting enough power to be able to make it a worthwhile investment for Walmart. Plus, they have the extra utility of all that shade. And, you know, let's face it, in the summertime, shade's pretty doggone valuable here.
So. This summer, I don't know what you've been thinking, but this summer has been, it's been a wake-up call for me.
A lot of triple digits, man. A lot of triple digits.
I was waiting.
This week will be okay. This week will be mid and low 90s. So,
I have AccuWeather Las Cruces highlighted on my phone, so I click to see when are we going to get to the 80s.
Yes,
on a regular basis.
That's going to be a few more weeks.
Yeah, and we start getting into 80s consistently. I think the 15th of September, but we're still in the low 90s, which is a gift
compared to where we've been. Yeah, man, this is magic.
If you're just tuning in, this is Keith Welpley sitting in for Kelly O'Connell, and I have Mello Honick from Sunspot Solar. We're gonna be covering this next hour and then tomorrow, Tuesday, the whole 2 hours. And I really appreciate you filling in with me. I always feel more comfortable with a co-pilot.
Well, it's fun doing this as a team. I think that, maybe we can bring some things here. We got some local stuff going on. I think we can bring some things here.
And we are going to have a guest the second hour of today.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow we'll just see how it goes. There are several people we threw a line out to see if they'd come on the program. So, it's just, who's got the time.
Well, you know, and I think the topic this morning is going to be is particularly important because, I mean, this is probably the most one of the most significant topics in the state right now.
It's the budget shortfall that we're going to face for sure. And I don't know if there's any end in sight for low oil prices. I do.
It's kind of an irony, isn't it? Everybody screams and cries about gas prices, and then when they go down, there's a lack of awareness of how that impacts the state's benefit so much and rely so much on oil prices for you know to fund their operations.
Yeah, we enjoy the low gas prices in the industry where you're driving around a lot.
Sure.
And when people start crying about no revenue,
but you also enjoy the
coffers,
roads.
Right. And then you start thinking, okay, I gotta really squint my mind to see if I should feel bad that Santa Fe doesn't have more money than it should. But you're right. We have so many services that have to be funded. Roads is a big one.
Well, just all of it. I mean, I picked roads just because of the dichotomy between, I get to drive at a lower cost, but you know, there are consequences.
Yeah. Now I'm looking at this board now, and I think I'm thinking that the top of the hour is when we go to, which we're about 6 minutes away.
Yes.
This is interesting because I have been away from this, and although it's very familiar, I'm still really nervous about how and when to start pushing buttons. And of course, Kelly's doing all this fancy stuff with this extra computer here, and he starts pushing things and that sort of thing. He's masterful at this. Even when I was doing this.
Well,
we
want to make sure we don't miss that sunspot solar.
Yeah.
The rest of them, you know.
Yes. So we could talk about that. You know, before we came on the air, the other thing we don't have to talk about at length is, you know, this. And I tell you, I was watching the Olympics, and the very first commercial that I've seen where ExxonMobil does a commercial about carbon capturing, they call it.
Uh-huh.
And that is this whole concept that you capture carbon before it leaves your vehicle or leaves the factory. It's the technology is there. I mean, this technology was developed by the Nazis when they had U-boats and submarines. They needed to capture the carbon because obviously they weren't getting an infusion of fresh air. And so they had to come up with the technology. Well, they've advanced that even
more. Scrubbers.
Right. Mm-hmm. They've advanced, and I think that was Apollo 13.
Yes.
Too, right?
The space program had the same issue, yeah.
So now they extended that, and they've had technology for quite some time for capturing carbon. And this yesterday I was watching the Olympics, and the very first commercial I ever saw on television where Exxon was promoting their initiatives to capture carbon at the point that it is expelled into the atmosphere, which I think is a new science. I don't trust it that Exxon is really going to be doing that, but it was nice to see at least it's on the radar screen.
Well, it fit the ecological theme present, you know, at the Olympics and particularly with the opening ceremonies and so on.
Yeah.
But there's an irony there with Brazil because, of course, of all the reports of the contamination of their bays and the ocean just off their coast and so forth.
And you heard about the Lochte, the swimmer, American swimmer being held.
There's
a lot of crime in the news reports.
Yeah,
there's a lot more than just that. I
mean,
every day it was an occurrence. So when you're going off and when you're going jumping over the wall of the Olympic Village to sort of get into the community, it's a pretty rough place.
Well, yeah. I mean, I remember before the Olympics started, reading articles and things like for the Olympic sailing team. Mm-hmm. You know, the instructions were don't get wet. because of the what's in the water, right?
And then the divers had to dive in a green pool. I don't know if they.
At the same time, really, you know, if you look at the whole of it, there haven't been a lot of reports out of Rio, and I think that's in contrast to what we might have all expected to have happened.
Yeah. So. Well, it's run real clean. And of course, the United States is just cleaning up. I just can't believe that we're just bringing home so much hardware.
Yeah.
From this event. I mean, Michael Phelps, come on. How many?
Well, and Ledecky just seems to swim with a motor attached.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to throw it out there.
Don't. Because look, there's no reason to even make the allegation because thing will happen.
Uh-huh.
And if there's a problem, it'll be found.
Just enjoy it while
enjoy it. Enjoy it. And you know what? There are going to be, see, that's the problem is there are going to be breakout athletes. In fact, if there aren't going to be breakout athletes, why bother having an Olympics at all?
Right.
Okay.
What is impressive is that these, you know, Michael Phelps, great. You're going to, Usain Bolt is retiring from his Olympic career.
Right.
There will be people, I don't think much longer after this, who will break even their records.
Yeah.
The human race, I don't know what it is about us, but we seem to find the energy and the drive and the will to break records that just seem insurmountable.
This is just the sort of the continuum of America, well, of athletic skill over time. I mean, these athletes, the competition is harder, the training is more rigorous, and they're just going to continue to find the more stellar athlete time after time. It's going to happen. You're going to get the one. But it is amazing to watch a group of, say, 20 athletes competing, and there is one that is just is demonstrably better than the other 19. And it's pretty extraordinary.
It's very extraordinary. Again, this is Keith Welpley. I'm sitting in for my good friend Kelly O'Connell, and Bill Ohanek is here. We're going to be going to news here shortly.
Like now.
Starting the day the right way, kind of, right?
The right way.
This is Keith Welpley sitting in for Kelly O'Connell. We'll be sitting in today, and as soon as this music starts, let's see, we got four
it
seconds, three,
stops.
Two, one, stops. There we go. Mel Ohanek is here with me, and we're both filling in today and tomorrow. And then Bill McCamley, he was gracious enough to come on this AM station and talk about what's coming up. And, of course, Sirius.
Yeah.
Before we get to that, Mel, I want to jump back to the whole Olympics thing. And
well, just this one thing with the Russian swimmer and the doping thing. You know, the one of the things that troubles me actually in sports in general, in fact, in a lot of public people, is their ability to apologize. There is no ability at all to apologize, right? So here's this whole thing with her and the doping and whatnot and so forth. And every time she's interviewed, she wants to point a finger at somebody else rather than standing up and saying, you know what, here's what I did, here's why I did it, and it was wrong. I still want to compete as an athlete, and please, you know, let me back in. I'm sorry.
Now, let me ask you a question, though.
Sure.
So Ray Rice.
Yep.
And this is something where there's a pretty valid point on either side of this issue. So Ray Rice, for those of you listening, was the running back for the Baltimore Ravens that got caught on video hitting his girlfriend, who's now
right,
his wife.
Right, in the elevator, yeah.
He has apologized profusely. He has donated his time to domestic violence issues. He has done all these things, and yet no NFL team is now signing him.
Right.
Because it's on video.
Right.
So here's my question. He did apologize.
And well, initially
the
it was kind of
thing is tough.
Right, but initially it was sort of he did what a lot of apologists do,
right,
which is to treat it like a narration, like, well, yes, so these types of things are bad things for people to, you know, in other words, he didn't take it as I did this, here's what was going on, and it's wrong, and here are the changes I need to make. He didn't, eventually he did.
Right.
But that's not how it started. But I'm okay with the eventually.
Right.
The rest of it's business. I mean, those are business.
I understand, but I mean, that's the reason. Like, if he wasn't in that situation. Now, granted, he brought that on himself. I'm just saying, this was a topic of discussion for me and a couple of my friends the other day, because they're talking about domestic violence is bad. I mean, it's really bad.
This country in particular, it's epidemic.
It's a serious issue. And so when you have someone of that stature who commits domestic violence and it's so public and so out there, there are real negative connotations to that. On the other side, you know, do you give people second chances? And if so, what do you give people second chances for? I will say one other thing when you're talking about apologies, though, probably the best example, and this is something that I wish more public officials would take on. So after the Bay of Pigs invasion in, I believe, 1961, JFK had just gotten sworn in as president like 2 or 3 months before. I mean, it was really very close to right after he took office. And the U.S. did the Bay of Pigs. The CIA had been planning it with these Cuban exiles in Florida for years. And it was a complete disaster. It was a failure. It was a massacre. And Kennedy gets up on national TV and says, you know, this wasn't my plan. This was already in the works, but I gave the go-ahead. I said yes. this is my responsibility. I apologize and we'll do better. And everyone was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. Come clean, do the thing and move on.
Yeah.
Now with Ray Rice, I mean, it's business, right? So there's a business calculus.
Sure.
And so, and what is it? See, a second chance doesn't mean you get to go back as if nothing ever happened and do what you wanted to ultimately do. For him, a second chance is he's not in jail.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
We're going to go to break real fast, but I want to throw in one name. And I feel I still see that she's one of the most noble athletes, American athletes. But I think there's only one that I know of, and maybe you guys can correct me, who's really been in prison for taking dope. Marion Jones, 2008.
Oh, yeah.
She stood up. She said, I did it. And they put her to prison for 6 months. And I think she's the only one out of all these prima donna athletes who you can tell are on steroids or some kind of doping. She's the only one who served time. She stood up. She apologized. I remember it. She was crying, and she was so sorry for doing it. They threw her in jail or prison for 6 months. She came out. She's not running now, but, that is the noble thing to do. I just feel bad that she's the only one who's ever been thrown in prison for taking dope.
Well, you got to take responsibility for what you do. If you're going to do it, you get caught, take responsibility for it, and move on. And again, second chance doesn't necessarily mean you get to continue on the same path, but you get some path to continue.
We're going to take a break right here and come right back and get right into the special session that is looming large in the state of New Mexico. Bill McCamley is here. We'll be back. And we are back. We're filling in for Kelly O'Connell. I hope we don't wreck his audience's numbers. And it's Bill McCamley.
Or the board.
Or the board. Spill coffee on it.
Is it still in one piece?
You know, Kelly.
Are they supposed to smoke like that?
Yeah. We're gonna be talking about something, Bill McCamley.
That's smoking.
I mean, we see smoking coming out of Santa Fe from here. We got a real big budget crisis, I think, in the state. And of course, we're just beginning to feel the brunt of gas prices being so low,
right?
Which means when OPEC's pumping a lot of oil, New Mexico oil people have to either shut down or decide they're going to sell their oil for a lot less than what they're used to.
But, well, let's start off with kind of what's going on here. So I'm Bill McCamley. I'm a state representative here in New Mexico, and I represent this area of Las Cruces, so that's why these Yahoos brought me on this morning.
Yeah.
So here's So here's the situation. About 10, 12 years ago, New Mexico started cutting taxes in a trickle-down or supply-side economic strategy, depending on what side of the aisle you're on. So in 2004, we cut income taxes for wealthy folks by a good amount. The next year, we cut capital gains taxes in an effort to try to spur economic development by getting rich people to move here, that sort of thing. In 2013, we cut taxes for large corporations, and same kind of strategy. And the problem is that really hasn't worked at all. There's been no discernible benefit from the tax cuts back in 2004 and 2005. And it's probably too early to really look at the 2013 tax cuts because they didn't go into 2014. It's only been a couple of years, but it hasn't worked. Now, in the mid-2000s, we could do this tax cut strategy because gas prices were way up. If you'll remember back, even in 2007, people were paying $3.50 a gallon. And that's really good for the state because we make almost 35-37% of our state revenue either directly or indirectly from gas production, either by directly taxing oil and gas as it comes out of the ground, or by the income taxes and gross receipts taxes, sales taxes, that people in Farmington and Hobbs and Roswell, those areas that have gas, what they spend.
Right.
And so when gas prices are really high, we make a lot of money. You don't have to have the income taxes being where they were. And so we really didn't feel the brunt of it. This year, however,
at the time it was an okay plan because of the outlook for oil and gas.
Right. But the problem is when you basically put all your eggs in one basket, when we tie our cart to this oil and gas horse, I mean, you guys have seen Friday Night Lights, right? Or read the book. It's just like we're like a big version of Odessa or Midland now. It's feast or famine, feast or famine.
Right.
It's like a roller coaster. And right now, so what we do every year at the state is base our budget on projections. Mm-hmm. And the projections for this year were that oil, not natural gas, but oil would hit $50 a barrel and probably stay there. Well, as of Friday, it was at 42. 43. I didn't check it this morning, but it did hit 50 briefly about 2 or 3 months ago, and we were all pretty happy about it. And then it went back down again. So at the end of August, there's going to be an examination of where the revenue projections are, and we will probably go back to a special session of the legislature to cut the budget. That probably will happen. And just one more thing before I let you in, Mello. The governor has already asked all of the departments at the state level to cut their budgets by 5%. Now, what does this mean? It just sounds so easy when it's, the departments have to cut their budgets. So this is education. And so your schools are definitely going to have less money to hire teachers. The university is already giving people pink slips, and that will probably continue. When you look at programs, the one that affects me the most is the homeless veterans program. We in Las Cruces were able to get down to what is called functional zero homelessness for veterans. Or if you're a veteran and you wanted to get off the street, there are programs there to give you mental health counseling and transition
and
housing services. And there's outreach, exactly.
Which is the important thing.
Now, those programs were already cut this year, and a bunch of us were able to find the money to make up for that. The city of Las Cruces really stepped up. A lot of the city councilors gave the rest of their travel budgets, and a few of us, myself included, donated private money. That is not sustainable. And if there's more cuts, those programs probably go away. So this has a real effect on people. This has a real effect on kids. It has a real effect on veterans. Remember, the state police is a state agency. So if we don't have the money to be able to fund our cops, public safety suffers. I mean, these are real issues that affect real people, and that's a problem.
Well, doesn't the state do any of the counties also get money from the state for sheriffs and whatnot?
Not really. Cities and counties have their own revenue streams. Now, they are affected by tax revenue. It's funny because Doña Ana County is actually one of the few counties in the state that is doing fairly well. We actually had a 6% rise in our overall gross receipts tax revenue in the last year. And that's because we've got the border, which is doing pretty well. You've got businesses starting like Virgin Galactic, which is bringing people in. That we seem to at least be treading water and probably doing a little bit better positively than the rest of the state. But San Juan County, for instance, has one of the largest out-migration percentages in the nation right now. There are so many people moving out of San Juan County. This is the Farmington area. Mm-hmm. Because natural gas prices are so low and they rely on that industry so heavily that it really affects their local governments like crazy. We down here doing fairly well, but other counties around the state, especially in the Northwest and the Southeast, are really hurting.
And does volume help on the oil and gas side, or in other words, is that an input that help can offset?
It does. Okay. And when you look at the technology that they're using, the fracking technology to increase volume is very high. But as Keith pointed out, kind of starting off, there's a lot of external factors, oil and gas prices. So you pointed out that Saudi Arabia decided to start pumping a lot of oil to get prices back down. And for some of us that have been hearing about this, they were really worried no one was buying SUVs anymore, because that's a long-term thing. If I buy an SUV, I've got that thing for 5-10 years. And if I'm buying a Prius, then I've got that for 5 or 10 years, and then I'm not really buying any gas. But there's some other things as well. So, for instance, the production has gotten so good here in the United States, the technology, mm-hmm. that we ourselves are pumping so much that helps the prices go down. Furthermore, the Brazilian economy was doing really, really well for a while. For those of us that have been watching the Olympics,
right,
or the World Cup, that their economy really took a turn for the worse. And China, which for years had been driving high oil and gas prices because they were growing like crazy, they've kind of leveled off. And the projections for Chinese growth are down. And here in the United States, more and more people are buying cars that are more energy efficient. So I can buy a new F-150 with an aluminum block that gets 20, 25 miles to the gallon. 20
right.
years ago, that thing gets 10 or 15?
At best, yeah.
Right. I just bought a Mazda 3 that gets almost, 37, 38 miles to the gallon on the highway. And I traded in my Honda Element, which was getting 22. Right. And more people are doing these sorts of things. Furthermore, the efficiency that builders are using in houses is going way up. And so as people don't need to heat their homes as much in the summer because their homes are more efficient with better insulation, prices go down. So all of these things have really contributed to a flatlining and big decrease in oil and gas prices. And that's the problem with our state. We did put all our eggs in that oil and gas basket, and now we're paying the price.
Well, one of the things that we're all going to be looking for is that big idea.
Options.
Options. Yeah. Not only options to sort of stem the flow and to fix the problem short term until gas prices go back up, but what's the big idea for diversifying our economy?
How much time do we have?
Is there a silver bullet? Probably not.
No.
But what are some of the big ideas that are going to be? Now, it says here that news comes on. We're sort of talking through this board thing here, Bill, so bear with us.
All right.
Looks like I should push that. We've been on
that. That seems like a long time.
Yeah. Should I push that, see what happens?
Let's go. Let's give it a go. Bear with us, folks.
And sitting in for Kelly O'Connell is Keith Welpley, and I'm here with Mel Honig, my cohort for many years.
We're back.
And then sitting in with us this hour has been Bill McCamley, and we're talking about the financial shortfall New Mexico finds itself in. Oil and gas prices have been low for a long, long time, for years. How many years?
Oh, just a year. They were actually doing really well around this time last year. We went into the last legislative session thinking that, okay, we might be able to do something.
You guys are all fishnets. So now we have to figure out that problem. When we left it, one of the questions I threw out there was, what are some of the big ideas? Are there any big ideas for fixing the problem with oil and gas? And then in the long term, figuring out ways to diversify, in investments or economy here in New Mexico.
Yeah, and we tried some of this about 8-9 years ago. So when you look at, for instance, the film incentive program, which has been pretty controversial, they have had some success. So if you go up to Albuquerque and Santa Fe, they were actually able to build some film production facilities. And because of that, they were able to have Breaking Bad. There's a current TV show called Longmire that's filming up in Santa Fe. For those of you that saw the recent Independence Day movie, apparently it wasn't very good.
Yeah, for the few people who saw it.
Yeah, my friend in Ireland was texting me. He's like, I was watching Independence Day. It's so bad, I'm cheering for the aliens. But it made a lot of money, right? And that was filmed, a lot of that was filmed here in the state. And so you've seen some traction up there. Now, we really haven't seen a lot of the money come down here to Las Cruces, and that's one of the issues.
Do we have a calculation yet as to whether or not the expenditure, the income,
really depends on who you ask.
And how you account for
it. Yeah, what is that? There's lies, damn lies, statistics. And some people say it's really good. Other people say it's not worth it. But there has been some traction in the Albuquerque and Santa Fe area. When you look at the tax cuts that have really happened, it hasn't really helped. Now, part of the 2013 tax cut was to help manufacturing. And that was basically to help Intel. For those of you that don't know, Intel has a large manufacturing chip facility in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. The problem there is that facility is fairly outdated. And about 4 or 5 months after that tax cut was passed, they laid off a bunch of people. And it looks like that trend is going to continue. So people have kind of tried. It all comes down to this, though. You can't just cut taxes and expect the economy to magically grow. It doesn't happen that way. And the case point for that is Kansas. So there was a guy named Sam Brownback who has a very, very conservative political ideology and said, we're going to try an experiment here in Kansas and cut income taxes like crazy. And I think sales taxes like
crazy.
Didn't
they go to zero on some?
He did. And they expected the economy, and this has been going now for a good 5, 6, 7 years. And so you've had some time to look at these policies. Hasn't worked at all.
It's
that
trickle down idea, right?
Right. And in fact, Kansas recently, I was just in Omaha a couple months ago for a conference, an oil and gas conference, funnily enough, but they had just had to borrow, I think it was $300 million to pay for their education system, because they cut all these taxes and the economy didn't grow. What really works is some combination of investment in infrastructure, investment in education, and a reasonable tax policy. So what I generally advocate for is this. Early childhood education works. And in fact, last year, for those of you that don't know, New Mexico State puts on this thing called the Domenici Conference every year.
I always go. It's a great program.
So last year, if you were there, you heard ex-Governor Hunt from North Carolina talk talking about how North Carolina really turned around from the early 90s to today. North Carolina in the early 90s was pretty close to us in terms of their income, education levels, that sort of thing. And what he said is, look, we did two things. We really invested in early childhood education. We got reading levels up. We were invested in our kids. And that really helps in so many ways. It's good for health outcomes. It's good for reading outcomes. It's good for the economy, less crime, all that stuff. And they really poured a lot of resources, both, you know, money into infrastructure, but also their attention into the research triangle. So that's where Duke University, University of North Carolina, and North Carolina State is.
Right. Apple's since moved there.
Absolutely. I think there's some issues now because of their transgender law, but they've really done well focusing on those types of strategies where they invested in education and they invested in infrastructure. And I think if we did that here, I tend to be a supporter of the Spaceport. I really think it's going to work.
I do too. I know.
It's been a long slog, yeah, but yeah. I generally tell people, you know how they say this isn't rocket science? Well, the Spaceport is rocket science, yeah, literally. Yeah. And it looks like Virgin just got their license to test their new plane. And so we're hoping by next year they're out here working. And that's going to bring, what did they say? I think 70 people to between here and Truth or Consequences working. And I think that's great. That's the sort of thing where if you get 70 people and you're averaging $100,000 a year in terms of their salaries, that's a big deal. The new Burrell School of Osteopathic Medicine just
awesome.
Opened up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They just had their white coat ceremony on Saturday morning. They've got 165 medical students coming into the area. Now, why is this great for the economy? Well, you got 80 people working over there, from the janitors all the way up to the guy running the school. They average about $100,000 a year. It's going to be an $8 million increase into the state, to the local area's economy every year that we didn't have.
And there's some value in being known for something,
absolutely.
In an area being known for something.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
always.
Osteopathic
always.
Medicine is relatively new in terms of mainstream. It's just now getting
right.
coming into its own. And if you can be one of those areas known for that, generating these kinds of physicians, delivering services that people now are demanding,
right?
That's all good.
But there's a couple other, I agree with you, and there's a couple other things we need to be working on as well. So I'm a big proponent of the border. If you go down to Santa Teresa, you know, 20, 30 years ago, that was nothing. It was desert. And now it's a very sprawling campus of industrial warehousing, manufacturing, and transportation because of the trade we do down into Ciudad Chihuahua. And that needs to continue to expand. We're working right now to try to expand the hours down there till midnight. And the community college here, Doñana Community College, has just started programs where they're actually going down there on campus to start training programs. So the more we can do this workforce education, the more we can expand the infrastructure, the better we're going to be. I think the one area that we really need to do better at as a state is higher education. So there are 17 different higher education administrations in the state, and it doesn't really work well for a couple reasons. Number one, it doesn't allow our institutions to focus on one thing. So, for instance, New Mexico State has branch campuses in Alamogordo and Grants and Carlsbad. I think that's it. I could be wrong. But they have to really focus on doing two-year colleges out in kind of the hinterlands and their research mission, which is here. UNM's in the same boat. Hell, Eastern New Mexico's in the same boat. Eastern New Mexico has branch colleges in Ruidoso and Roswell. And what I'm going to be proposing in the next legislative session, if I get reelected, is a plan to say we're going to do one board of regents for UNM, NMSU, and New Mexico Tech. We're going to do one for our four regional institutions. So that's Western, Eastern, Highlands, and Northern New Mexico. And we're going to take away, we're going to ask the people, because you got to change the Constitution to do this, but to put one administration in for all the two-year colleges. And that does two things. Number one, it lets us use our resources more efficiently, where you're not spending money on all these different administrations all over the place. But number two, and more importantly, in my opinion, our research universities need to focus on research together. And here's a problem. So Sandia National Labs are located in Albuquerque, and they're a huge economic driver for the Albuquerque area and for the state. Well, they generally contract out to universities to run their administration. So they're putting out an RFP. And NMSU and New Mexico Tech have combined with Lockheed to make one bid. And UNM has combined with to make another bid. So our higher education institutions are competing with one another to be able to get this. We should be working together on these things. And if we split our resources, and for instance, University of California gets it, we're really, up a creek with
you
no
see the
paddle.
Same thing with the lottery scholarships. When tuitions go up for lottery scholarships, it's not necessarily the cost of providing that education to students. It's them wanting to grab a bigger piece
right.
of that lottery dollar. It's if you're all competing against each other, then that's what happens. You have this artificial inflation of tuition because they want to, they see how much money is in the wallet and they want to get it all or
right.
as much of it as they can.
So what I hear you saying is that the plan is to get a greater level of focus
yes.
and a greater level of efficiency by reducing number of administrative
absolutely
costs. But I have one question about it, and that is these different areas, these different regions, though, also have very different populations
mm-hmm.
with different needs. How do you continue to address the diversity of the state in implementing this plan?
Well, that's going to be mostly an issue for the community colleges. They're the ones that are in a lot of different places, and to a lesser extent, the regional institution. But what has been proposed, and this is going to be a discussion, so we're going to have to feel through this,
right.
but is to have one board of regents, but have an advisory board in every community
okay.
that allows them to have input in the process. But a lot of times these guys are volunteers. It doesn't take as much time. It doesn't take as many resources. But here's another problem.
But they don't have control. It's just,
no,
this,
no.
This is just sort
exactly.
of we would like to have.
Right. But I think here's the other problem we've got when your two-year universities are under these large-scale research universities like NMSU or UNM. There is massive amounts of pressure on the two-year schools to get their kids out of the two-year schools and into seats at the four-year
That's
institution.
Wrong. That's wrong.
But there is because of the pressure at the four-year
yeah.
schools
to get more
to get
students,
more students
right.
to
right.
increase their budget.
Right, right,
the
right.
problem with that is simple. These two-year certificates and associate's degrees are really valuable. My girlfriend has an MRI degree from Doñana Community Colleges. I have a master's from Harvard in public policy. She probably makes 2 to 3 times what I make, and literally. And these things are needed, and they need to focus on that kind of workforce training, which is going to be needed, and give people a real leg up.
Yeah, I agree with that, and we're going to go to break here in a minute, but I want to stay on this because I think two-year universities – are not really given the credit they deserve
Absolutely.
For providing. They're more responsive to four-year institutions. If there's going to be economic change in a state, two-year institutions are it's a lot easier for them to pivot and provide what they need, what a community needs, than a four-year institution.
Yeah, we don't have a dearth of MBA. It's not an MBA problem. It's just having good qualified people at the worker level that have abilities.
You're listening to Kelly O'Connell's show, filling in as Keith Welpley today and tomorrow. Mel O'Hanek is with me, and we're talking about the state economy of Bill McCamley, state legislator. We'll be right back after these breaks.
I guess the only thing I'd really want to get in kind of
And welcome back. It's Keith Gulpley filling in for Kelly O'Connell, and we have Mel Ohanek at my side. We also are talking to Bill McCamley. We're talking about the budget shortfall that they're going to, New Mexico's going to be facing, and legislators like Bill are going to have to start debating and figuring out how do we sort of navigate this time of thin revenues. And we're talking about some of the big ideas, if there are such things as big ideas anymore. But education is a big one.
Mm.
And before we move on to that, because I think that's a good topic to go on to, you know, my daughter started NMS. She will start this semester. And, you know, one of the things I think is a flaw in the whole lottery scholarship situation is that requires students right out of high school to go into college to
right.
benefit from the. I think there ought to be a footnote or a caveat for people who want to take 2 or 3 or 4 years off, and then they can still access that scholarship because it gives them a, you know, if they're going to travel to Europe, see things, and then come back with a clear
vision. Or get a job for a year or
right.
two and build up some money.
And
just build up the experience of actually working in the world to
right.
see what it is, what it's like.
I didn't go to college until 6 years after after high school.
Right.
Of course, I didn't have any grand plan that I was going to become, you know, famous and big and learn a lot. I just didn't have a publisher. I just didn't have
famous
any money.
Famous radio host.
But I came back, but I had a clear picture. And you know what? Even a transfer from Illinois
right.
to New Mexico University, I still made it out in 4 years. It's remarkable when you have a focus and a vision. I knew what I was going to do. I didn't want to take anything extra. I didn't waste any time taking classes that I didn't have to take.
Keith, I think that's a good point. And I know that so once again, this is a very complicated discussion. But the long and short of the lottery is there's less money coming in, or the money for the lottery is really evened out. They're not really getting increases in the lottery. At the same time, tuition's going up, and so the lottery is not covering 100% of tuition anymore. So one of the solutions that I've been trying to work on with some of the student government folks here at New Mexico State is how do we give students options? And that's one of the options that has been batted around, and I think it's a good one to look at.
Maybe they don't get the full scholarship.
But hold on. This isn't the problem.
Right.
I think we need to have a laser focus on our economy, because here's the issue. We can talk about the lottery as much as we want. We can talk about early education as much as we want, and I think that's important. But here's the issue. If we don't do a better job fixing our economic situation, students are going to be coming out of high school, out of community college, out of their four-year degree, and they're not going to have the option to stay here. So where are they going to go? They're going to do what they always do. They're going to go to Denver and Dallas and Phoenix. And the problem there is this. The New Mexico taxpayer invests in our education system. 44% of our state budget goes to K-12 education. Another 12, 13% goes to higher education. More than half of the tax money that you pay goes to education. Mm-hmm. If students are not getting an education and sticking around, what we're doing is subsidizing the workforce of Dallas, Denver, Phoenix, everywhere else. We are losing our money. And so it's a downward spiral, right? People leave. That money that we've invested in them is lost because their education and their expertise is going to somewhere else. We then have less money because they're not paying the tax money into the system to
right.
put less money into our education and infrastructure system.
And
we
it makes
less
more,
jobs.
And it makes it more difficult to bring in industry because we don't have the resources.
Spiral yeah. on
right.
down. We have got to find a way. I mean, we can't just say, okay, the oil and gas industry is going to bottom out. It'll rebound sometime. That's like Rick Perry at the drought saying we're all going to pray for rain. That's not good enough. We've got to do a better job of being proactive, and we've got to have a sense of urgency in the state. That, to me, is one of the real problems. New Mexico State has the Arrowhead Center, which is supposed to do entrepreneurial education. It actually does a good job, but I just got a report from them saying in 2013, 2014, they created 44 jobs that they can measure, but 34 of those were at the Arrowhead Center.
Mm.
Only 10 of them were in the private sector. We've got to do better. We have to find ways of saying we're going to plan out a better strategy. How are we going to fix this? What are we going to do to try to get people to stay here? We cannot continue to educate people and have them leave. Davin Lopez runs the Mesilla Valley Economic Development Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
That's the local group trying to increase business. And he's done a pretty good job. I actually like what he's done in a lot of ways. But he was telling me they were down at Arrowhead for one of these presentations. And this guy was coming up with a new business. And he says, I got educated here, and I'm doing well, and I'm going to move to Seattle, and everyone's cheering. He's like, whoa, 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 time out. Why are you cheering? We spent all this money and all this time educating this young man who's going to go to Seattle. That's a failure. How do we get better at this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the kind of question I need to really start asking much more of,
and that we need to develop this sense of urgency of getting better.
I got one silver bullet for that. Actually, two. More coffee shops and brew pubs. You'll steal people from Seattle.
All right. That's the key. That's the Keith plan. We'll just call it the Keith plan.
We're going to take a break right here. We are talking about the economy. Of course, that's serious business. We'll be right back after this. And welcome back. It's Keith Welpley sitting in for Kelly O'Connell, and I have Milo Honick next to me. He'll be here with me tomorrow as well. And then Bill McCamley's been here. We're talking about the state budget shortfall that's looming overhead. Although we've been talking about a special session a little bit, one hasn't even been called. Chances are good, bad, that it will be, you think?
Well, look, this is a political football, right? And no one wants to call the special session. And let's back up a second, and let's really explain this for some of the folks who might not know. The New Mexico legislature only meets to make decisions once a year generally. So we meet for 2 months in the odd years and 1 month in the even years. And that's it. That's all we end up doing. And our constitution was written in 1912 when a bunch of ranchers who were basically in the legislature would get together in those winter months when they didn't have a lot of farmers and ranchers, when it was their off season, and would do the state's business and go away. I mean, there's some arguments to be made that we probably need to modernize the way we do our state government like other states do. And that
just
may be one of the reasons.
Yeah,
right. But that may be one of the reasons that we are so far behind, is we don't have the opportunity to make decisions on a more timely basis. But a special session can be called. Usually the only time that's done on a regular basis is every 10 years when redistricting happens after we get census numbers. But this year, obviously, the revenues are so far short of the projections that we had.
What is a delta?
It's anywhere between $300 and $500 million, depending on who you're talking to. And in a state budget of basically $6 billion, that's a pretty decent chunk.
Sure.
And so what are our options? And there's two ways to call a special session. The governor can just call one in whenever she wants to, or the legislature can actually sign a petition where three-fifths of legislators sign this document saying we're going to call ourselves back into what they call extraordinary session. It's the same thing. The problem with doing that is that, the issue with doing that is that the House is controlled by Republicans, and they are generally pretty close with the governor. And so for them to break with what the governor wants to do, if the governor doesn't want to call a special session, would be very unlikely. And so for the good or bad of this is on the governor. If she wants to call a special session and have us do this, she will. The problem is that, once again, politically, this is tough, because when we go up there, the only thing that's going to happen is bad news.
Okay, so, but your point there is if the governor doesn't call a special session, the legislators are probably not.
They can. We can.
But they probably won't because of...
I agree.
Because they're not going to go against a governor of their own
party. It is very unlikely for that to happen. Now, the Senate's controlled by Democrats. They could do it, but the House has to agree as well.
Right. And this would be similar if the Democrat was a governor,
right,
and Democrats.
Yeah, it's so the way partisan
it's just,
politics
it's just,
work.
It's just a party
sure.
thing. Okay.
But here's the other problem that a lot of people, especially in some of the media outlets, are having, is the governor really wants to have a session where we go up there for like 4 hours, where all the details are worked out beforehand, and then we go up there and just basically put our names to something and have a fix done. And a lot of the media outlets are saying, no, we don't want these discussions happening behind closed doors. We don't want these kind of smoke-filled rooms going into place where everything gets discussed. They want to have an open discussion. And those are the kind of conflicts we're going to have going forward, because this is going to be really hard. And someone like me, I will not sign, I will not vote for a budget that's all slash and burn, or you're just saying cut, cut, cut. If you're not looking at getting rid of, for instance, the loophole on capital gains or legalizing marijuana or any of these other revenue-increasing strategies that are options out there, they are real. If we're not looking at any of those and we're just looking at cutting funding for education, cutting funding for homeless veterans, cutting funding for cops, all these things, I won't vote for it. And I will push other things. And it's going to be an issue.
Are there results in yet for some of the states that have introduced the cannabis laws and changed that?
Yeah, it's generally been a very good success. I mean, Colorado is probably the poster child. Like I said, they brought in their first 6 months, $72 million in revenue just for the, that's not including all of the secondary benefits. So people paying more income taxes.
Put that in perspective. Of course, we don't know how much revenue a New Mexico law would take. $72 million
for half a year.
For half a year.
Right.
That's in tax revenue.
That's in tax revenue.
How important would that amount of money be for New Mexico's budget? Right.
All right. Let's play this game out. So Colorado's got what, 6 million people? Is that about right? I think
I'll look it up. Keep talking.
I think they do. We've got about two. So let's say they bring in $140 million this year. Let's say we brought in a third of that. What would that be? 60 million? No, roughly 40. Let's say 45 million.
5.5 million people.
Okay, so let's say we bring in $40 million of tax, just tax revenue from that. The bill currently that I've got right now would say 40% of that would go to K-12 education. So you're looking about $18 million. The shortfall that Las Cruces Public Schools had this year was $2.7 million. Las Cruces Schools got $2.7 million less from the state this year than they did last year, with the same amount of students. That's why they're going to have a teacher shortage. They're not going to be able to hire the teachers that they need to make up for those that are retiring. Just that revenue right there from marijuana would basically make up for the shortfall almost completely for schools around the state.
Right. So there obviously are concerns people have with legalizing cannabis, legalizing marijuana. Have any of those concerns materialized in Colorado?
The biggest one that I've seen is you've seen an increase in homeless youth in Colorado. That's the biggest negative that I've really
seen.
Is
there a correlation? Is this causation?
Yeah. Well, it's been generally riding it pretty high because they were the only ones, them in Washington, to do it for a while. And I think you've seen some of that traveling there. But that's really been it. You haven't seen the rest of this meteor is going to hit the earth where, first of all, marijuana usage rates have stayed almost the same. Police and the courts and prisons have been able to spend more money going after people like rapists and murderers because they're not enforcing marijuana laws. Okay. So you've not only seen an increase in revenue in general for the state schools, you've seen a decrease in the cost that
operations
to go after things that don't really matter. And let's be real clear here. I don't want to turn this into marijuana discussion, but alcohol is really bad for society in a lot of different ways. But when we did prohibition, it was a lot worse.
Yeah.
And when you look at marijuana, the effects of marijuana on all sorts of societal impacts are so much less than alcohol. First of all, if I go drink a bottle of Jack Daniels, I can die.
Right.
I can get alcohol poisoning and die. You cannot overdose on marijuana. You have to basically ingest 30% of your body weight in THC. I weigh a buck 90. So I would basically have to put away 60 pounds of THC to die, and that's
right.
just physically
that's a, that,
impossible.
That'd be
right?
a hard job.
I mean, this all sounds great, but how much of it is wishful thinking? We know where the public is on legalizing marijuana.
68%.
Right. Politicians, though, are way off that, but they're coming closer.
They are. Well, it made it to the floor of the Senate last year, and there were two or three votes that they had before that they didn't have last year. The problem we've got right now is in the House is that, like I said, Republicans control the infrastructure of the House. And though there are a few Republicans that would probably support this, the majority do not. And since they control the infrastructure, they can basically send my bill to a committee to die. The Speaker of the House, who's very against this, can send it to a committee that he knows will kill it, and it'll die.
And their big reason for being against it, is it religious or is it law enforcement?
You know, you've heard all sorts of stuff. They bring up the kind of gateway drug thing, which really has absolutely no data to back it up. I think there's a lot of just, I saw Reefer Madness when I was a kid back in the 50s, and that's what I think about marijuana.
But there's a timing issue here, too, because eventually it's going to get legalized.
Right.
But the problem is if we wait and do it, then by then Arizona will have already done it. Texas may have already done it. The earlier it happens, then we have Texas and Arizona as potential customers,
well,
and tax revenues.
Arizona might actually go this year. There's a ballot referendum in Arizona this upcoming November to legalize marijuana.
And they're a far more conservative state than we are.
They are, yeah. In a lot of ways. But if we did it here, our area in Doñana County would probably receive such a huge benefit because you've got El Paso right there.
Right.
You've got a 600, 800,000 person community, well, where people would... The people, sure, that want to do it legally would come would across the border.
Will our budget shortfall that we're going to experience make people more willing to go after that?
I hope so. I don't know. But that's really, we just don't know what we're going to be in. But I think that's one option. But we've got to look at other revenue options. We cannot just slash and burn kids and veterans and cops.
Well, hopefully we get some kind of a session. We are coming to the end of our tenure here this morning. But tomorrow morning we will be back. Mello and I will be back. We are sitting in for Kelly O'Connell, who had... A lot of things to take care of. You know, Bill Cameron, I have to say thank you so much for agreeing to be here.
Really appreciate you having me.
It was last minute stuff.